Okay. You go, boy. VOA 1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. On today's program, you will hear stories from Brian Lynn and John Russell. Later, I report on the increase in students repeating grades in U.S. schools. We close the show with the next part of our American History series. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
Germany says it will expand state loans to help struggling energy companies. The loans are meant to help companies hurt by increasing gas prices linked to the war in Ukraine. Russia sharply reduced gas exports to Europe after the West placed economic restrictions on Russia over its invasion of Ukraine. The action has led to increases in energy prices that threaten to put millions of Europeans into cold and poverty. The assistance will come from a $67 billion fund that Germany established to help companies deal with the economic effects of the COVID-19 pandemic. That information comes from the country's Handelsblatt newspaper. The fund is called the Economic Stabilization Fund, or ESF. The loans will provide guarantees and liquidity assistance to energy companies hit by large reductions in gas imports from Russia, German finance ministry officials said. The ministry added that the assistance plan is right for the current situation because it is unclear how long the country's energy issues will last. Germany's cabinet is expected to approve the plan on Wednesday. It will then be sent to Parliament for approval. Last week, one of Germany's biggest importers of Russian natural gas, VNG, became the latest energy company to ask the government for financial assistance to stay in business. VNG has been hit by a sharp drop in Russian gas exports to Europe. This has forced the company to raise its energy prices. In July, another German energy company, Uniper, secured about $19 billion in government assistance to support its business. The European Union agency in charge of securities is also considering EU-wide measures to help struggling energy companies meet rising demands ahead of winter. Separate proposals from the European Commission, EC, to fight the crisis are set to be announced Wednesday. EU energy ministers will then consider the proposals at a meeting on September 30th. A version of the EC proposals, seen by Reuters news agency, would place a limit on the earnings non-gas-fueled providers can make from selling electricity. The proposals would also require fossil fuel companies to share their profits to help provide assistance to the public and businesses facing high prices. EU diplomats say there is wide support for an earnings limit for non-gas providers. But countries are split over other ideas, including a gas price limit on Russian natural gas. Such a limit was not included in the early EC proposals. The energy crisis is already heavily affecting Europe's economy, even before the cold winter months arrive. I'm Brian Lynn.
A new study provides the earliest known evidence of amputation, the medical term for cutting off a part of a person's body. Around 31,000 years ago, a young adult had their left foot and part of their left leg removed in what is modern-day Indonesia, the study suggests. Scientists say the amputation was performed when the person was a child, and that the individual went on to live for years. The ancient surgery suggests that humans were carrying out medical operations much earlier than scientists had thought. The findings are in a study which was published in Nature. Tim Maloney of Griffith University in Australia was the study's lead researcher. Maloney said that researchers were exploring a cave in Borneo, a rainforest area known for ancient rock art, when they came across the person's burial. Although much of the skeleton remained, it was missing its left foot and the lower part of its left leg, Maloney explained. After examining the remains, the researchers concluded the foot bones were not missing from the burial or lost in an accident. Instead, the bones had been carefully removed. The remaining leg bone showed a clean cut that healed over, Maloney said. There were no signs of infection, which would be expected if the child had gotten its leg bitten off by a creature like a crocodile. And there were also no signs of a crushing fracture, which would have been expected if the leg had been cut off in an accident. The evidence suggests that the ancient people knew enough about medicine to perform surgery without fatal blood loss or infection, the writers said. Researchers do not know what kind of tool was used to amputate the limb or how infection was prevented, but they believe that a sharp stone tool may have made the cut, and some of the plant life in the area could have been used for medical treatment. Scientists believe that the community cared for the child for years afterward. Surviving as an amputee in a land with steep hills and thick forests would not have been easy, the study said. The child appears to have lived for around 6 to 9 years more after losing the limb, eventually dying from unknown causes as a young adult, researchers said. This early surgery rewrites the history of human medical knowledge and developments, Maloney said at a press conference. Before this find, the earliest example of amputation had been in a French farmer from 7,000 years ago. The farmer had part of his forearm removed. Scientists had thought that medical methods developed around 10,000 years ago. At that time, more humans began living in agricultural societies, the study writers said. But this study adds to growing evidence that humans started caring for each other's health much earlier than scientists had thought, said Alicia Schrenk, she was not involved with the study. Schrank is an anthropologist at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. It had long been assumed healthcare is a newer invention, Schrank said in an email. Research like this article demonstrates that prehistoric peoples were not just left to fend for themselves. I'm John Russell.
Some American children struggled to keep up with schoolwork in the first half of the COVID-19 pandemic. As a result, many states saw large increases in the number of students who had to repeat grades. Traditionally, experts say that repeating a grade can hurt a child's social life and academic future. But many parents have asked for their children to repeat grades to help them recover from the difficulties of online learning, quarantines, and school worker shortages. The Associated Press examined data from 26 states plus the District of Columbia on the most recent academic year. It found that 22 of the states, plus D.C., saw an increase in the number of students who were retained or held back a year. Three of those states, South Carolina, West Virginia, and Delaware, saw the number of retained students more than double. Pennsylvania passed a law during the pandemic permitting parents to let their children redo classes. The following year, the number of retained students in the state increased by about 20,000. Christy Price is the mother of a student in Pennsylvania who repeated a grade. She said it was a great decision for him. "At first, I didn't really want to do it," said her son Braylon, now 13. "But then, later in the year, I thought it would probably be better for me if I did." While the family's two daughters were able to keep up with school, even with limited classroom time, Braylon struggled. When he went back to in-person school for the first full academic year of the pandemic, he did not perform well. And that winter, Braylon suffered an injury that forced him to return to remote learning. On his repeat of sixth grade, Braylon had an individualized education program that helped him be more focused. Having more one-on-one attention from teachers helped too. Socially, he said the change was easy. Most of his friends had been in lower grades or attended different schools already. Education research, however, has been critical of making students repeat grades. Arthur Reynolds is a professor at the University of Minnesota. He said students who are retained are twice as likely to drop out of school. "Kids see it as a punishment," Reynolds said. "It reduces their academic motivation, and it doesn't increase their instructional advancement." But supporters of retention say none of the research was done during a pandemic, when many children attended online classes or did not attend at all. In most places, parents can ask for children to be held back. But the final decision is made by school leaders, who make decisions based on factors like academic progress. California and New Jersey also passed laws that made it easier for parents to demand their children repeat a grade. But that choice was only available last year. In Pennsylvania's Fox Chapel Area School District, two students were retained at the request of educators. Eight other families decided their students would repeat a grade. Another six discussed the new legislation with the school but decided against holding their students back. As a school district, we take retention very seriously, said Mary Catherine Reljack, who is the head of the district. She said the district involves parents, a team of educators, school counselors, and school leaders to help decide what is best for each child. Price says Braylon's retention helped him receive an individualized education program. The special education plan gave him more support as he attended sixth grade again. Braylon said he felt like the extra support was very important. He said he likes having one-on-one help from teachers sometimes. I think because of the pandemic, we, as parents, were able to see how much he was struggling, Price said. And we were able to recognize that he needed more help in order to be successful on his own. I'm Dan Novak.
Today on The Making of a Nation, we tell about relations between the American colonies and Britain after the French and Indian War. Here is Steve Ember.
The French and Indian War was one part of a world conflict between Britain and France. It was fought to decide which of the two powerful nations would control North America. The British defeated the French in North America in 1763. As a result, the British took control of lands that had been claimed by France. Britain was now responsible for almost 2 million people in the 13 American colonies and 60,000 French-speaking people in Canada. In addition to political and economic responsibilities, Britain had to protect all these colonists from different groups of Indians. This would cost a lot of money. Britain already had spent a lot sending troops and material to the colonies to fight the French and Indian War. It believed the American colonists should now help pay for that war. The colonists in North America in 1763 were very different from those who had settled there more than 100 years before. They had different ideas. They had come to consider their colonial legislatures as smaller but similar to the British Parliament in London. These smaller parliaments had helped the colonists rule themselves for more than 100 years. The colonists began to feel that their legislatures should also have the powers that the British Parliament had. The situation in England had changed as well. In the year 1707, the nation became officially known as Great Britain. Its king no longer controlled Parliament as he had in the early 1600s. Then the king decided all major questions, especially those concerning the colonies. But power had moved from the king to the Parliament. It was the legislature that decided major questions by the time of the French and Indian War, especially the power to tax. The parliaments in the colonies began to believe that they too should have this power of taxation. The first English settlers in America considered themselves citizens of England. They had made a dangerous trip across the ocean to create a little England in a new place, to trade with the mother country, and to spread their religion. By 1763, however, the colonists thought of themselves as Americans. Many of their families had been in North America for 50 to 100 years. They had cleared the land, built homes, fought Indians, and made lives for themselves far away from Britain. They had different everyday concerns than the people in Britain. Their way of life was different, too. They did not want anyone else to tell them how to govern themselves. The people in Britain, however, still believed that the purpose of a colony was to serve the mother country. The government treated British citizens in the colonies differently from those at home. It demanded special taxes from the colonists. It also ordered them to feed British troops and let them live in their houses. Britain claimed that the soldiers were in the colonies to protect the people. But the people asked, "Protect us from whom?" As long as the French were nearby in Canada, the colonists needed the protection of the British Army and Navy. After the French were gone, following their defeat in the French and Indian War, the colonists felt they no longer needed British military protection. The British government demanded that the colonists pay higher and higher taxes. One reason was that the government wanted to show the colonists that it was in control. Another reason was that Britain was having money problems. Foreign wars had left the country with big debts. The British thought the colonists should help pay some of these debts, especially those resulting from the French and Indian War. The American colonists might have agreed, but they wanted to have a say in the decision. They wanted the right to vote about their own taxes, like the people living in Britain. But no colonists were permitted to serve in the British Parliament. So they protested that they were being taxed without being represented. In 1764, the British Parliament approved the Sugar Act. This legislation set taxes on sugar, coffee, some wines, and other products imported to America in large amounts. It increased the taxes on European products sent to the colonies through Britain. The British government also approved new measures aimed at enforcing all trade laws. And it decided to restrict the production of paper money in the colonies. The American colonists opposed all these new laws. Yet they could not agree about how to resist. Colonial assemblies approved protests against the laws, but the protests were all different and had no real effect. Business groups attempted to organize boycotts of goods, but these were not very successful until the British government approved another tax in 1765, a tax on stamps. The Stamp Act probably angered more American colonists than any earlier tax. Under this law, the colonists had to buy a British stamp for every piece of printed paper they used. That meant they would be taxed for every piece of newspaper, every document, even every playing card. The colonists refused to pay. Colonial assemblies approved resolutions suggesting that the British Parliament had no right to tax the colonies at all. Some colonists were so angry that they attacked British stamp agents. Historians say the main reason the colonists were angry was because Britain had rejected the idea of no taxation without representation. Almost no colonist wanted to be independent of Britain at that time, yet all of them valued their rights as British citizens and the idea of local self-rule. They considered the Stamp Act to be the worst in a series of violations of these rights. The American colonists refused to obey the Stamp Act. They also refused to buy British goods. Almost 1,000 store owners signed non-importation agreements. This cost British businessmen so much money that they demanded that the government cancel the Stamp Act. Parliament finally canceled the law in 1766. The colonists immediately ended their ban on British goods. But the same day that Parliament ended the Stamp Act, it approved the Declaratory Act. This was a statement saying the colonies existed to serve Britain, and that Britain could approve any law it wanted. Many American colonists considered this statement to be illegal. Historians say this shows just how separated the colonies had become from Britain. Colonial assemblies were able to approve their own laws, but only with the permission of the British Parliament. The colonists, however, considered the work of their assemblies as their own form of self-rule. Britain canceled the Stamp Act, but did not stop demanding taxes. In 1767, Parliament approved a series of new taxes called the Townshend Acts. These were named after the government official who proposed them. The Townshend Acts set taxes on glass, tea, lead, paints, and paper imported into the colonies. The American colonists rejected the Townshend Acts and started a new boycott of British goods. They also took steps to increase manufacturing in the colonies. By the end of 1769, they had reduced by half the amount of goods imported from Britain. The colonies also began to communicate with each other about their problems. In 1768, the Massachusetts General Court sent a letter to the legislatures of the other colonies. It said the Townshend Acts violated the colonists' natural and constitutional rights. When news of the letter reached London, British officials ordered the colonial governor of Massachusetts to dismiss the legislature. Then they moved 4,000 British troops into Boston, the biggest city in Massachusetts and the biggest city in the American colonies. The people of Boston hated the British soldiers. The soldiers were controlling their streets and living in their houses. This tension led to violence.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world.